Welcome to another exciting episode of the Business of Digital podcast, featuring your hosts, Matt Siltala and Dave Rohr. Hey guys, excited to have you join us on another one of these Business of Digital podcast episodes. As always, we have my trusty co-host over there, Dave. How's it going?
It is going.
Now, today we also have a special guest. I'd like to introduce everyone to Lauren Vaccarello. Hello, Lauren.
Hi.
So, Lauren, you are the CMO of Talend, and I will let you kind of get into all of your duties, so to speak, and share with our audience whatever you want them to know about yourself. But I do appreciate you taking the time to join us and talk about, managing teams and a lot of the in-house type stuff. And so I do appreciate you taking this time and joining us on our podcast. And so I'll just turn it over to you, and then Dave, you can jump in with your questions.
Sounds great. No, I'm really, really excited to be here. Love the podcast. I'll give you a little bit about me and background. So I'm the CMO at Talend. We're a leading data integration and integrity company. So we focus on things like, do you have the right data? Do you have it in real time? Do you trust your data? What's the overall quality and how do you make decisions on it? Which I think as a marketer, one of our biggest complaints is what's going on with my data? And is this actually real and right? So it's sort of fun to be on the integration side of the house. So I've been in marketing for the better side of forever, and I've known Dave for
5, 06?
Yeah, 15 years, which is weird because neither of us are old enough to know each other that long.
No, we're not.
But definitely not. And I started out I started out in digital marketing before it was a socially acceptable profession, really early on in SEM and SEO. I worked for myself for a little while, eventually went over to Salesforce where I led digital for them, and then started to run marketing at a couple of different startups. I ran demand gen and brand and operations for their Box for a few years and customer engagement. And now I've been leading a marketing at Talend, which is super fun and exciting. And it's been interesting going from the, early days digital marketer to the demand gen marketer to the brand person. Now I work a ton on product marketing and messaging. So it's this really interesting evolution. And I have a privilege of leading a really great team at Talend.
And we won't say the industry in which you started, but you worked with Frank.
Yes.
If you don't know Aussie Webmaster, you guys probably were one of the biggest spenders at the time in the early days too, weren't you?
We were back in the day, and it's so funny when you think back, and I think back about how many years ago this was. The company I worked at, we were the 8th largest. Advertiser for Google for paid search in the early 2000s. And I mean, and now it's probably pennies compared to what the eighth largest advertiser spends, but we would spend a ton of money on paid search. And we were in a lot of ways.
Well, and think about this. Just think about the CPCs back then compared to now too.
I mean, it was going to be a sub a dollar. I was paying 15 cents for some of them. And there was a time.
You can pay 15 cents for a brand at this point, even if it's your own.
No, I don't think you can.
And to be able to spend, $1 million a month, it was nuts. And this was like the days of paid search where there used to be Overture for anyone who's old enough to remember.
Go to.
Oh my gosh.
Penny.
And you used to be able to do things like bid gapping, and everyone who went to school now to learn about paid search and online marketing, I get such a kick out of when I get to be one of the crusty old people that's like, let me tell you about bid gapping, where you used to have, we had two different web properties because I ran digital for a couple of different companies and sites simultaneously. So you used to be able to, I'm going to bid a dollar for this website because the competitor is willing to bid 99 cents. And then at my second site, I'm going to bid 98 cents. And then there's no one after that. So I'm going to spend, 10 cents a click over here, but I'm going to make my competitor pay max out their budget. And then
I'm just completely different strategies.
They're going to max out their budget. And my whole goal is to get the number two person to burn through their budget really fast. And then it drops my spend for my number one spot and my number two spot down to like 10 and 11 cents a click. And it's, I think back going, that was a little, it was a little shady, but it was really smart. And that was the sort of
early. That was how the markets were set up.
That was back, yeah.
And it was, how do you get creative? And it's the same thing now is, all right, here's your parameters. How do you get creative?
And if you really want to dig into, we talked with Jim Banks, for those listening, for almost an hour last year about this time. And all we did was talk for an hour with Jim about the old days and just the last 20 years or so of PPC.
Gosh, it.
So that was a fun, yeah, because that's all we talked about is that crazy stuff.
And can you believe that this has been 20 years? I'm not this old.
And you are the youngest one on this call, so we both hate you, by the way.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
So the real reason people want to hear, but I'm sure people that are listening, if they weren't part of that, are probably like, what are you guys talking about?
It was super fun, guys.
It just
Your background is actually pretty diverse, too, in the size of the companies you've worked at. From, now, I don't know if I'd say SMB, but you did run things on your own as a consultant, mid-size, and even enterprise when you worked at Salesforce. What are some of the big differences around like hiring, managing, and even like just the multiple offices and just all the different facets from the growth of a company and the size of a company to managing and working with marketing, sales, and different teams?
Totally. It is, it's very, very different sort of animals at different size companies. And I've, like, I was at Salesforce from 2,000 employees to 12,000. I used to run marketing for a company called AdRoll. And when I started, they were 150 employees, three people in marketing. When I left, they were probably 400 employees, 25 people in marketing. And then Box was, I don't know, maybe 2,000 employees and 90 people in marketing. Talend is about 1,400 employees, and I probably have 80 or 90 people in marketing. And I've done advisory work for, you know, five-person startups. It's really interesting. The thing I always say is that what gets you to 5 million is not what gets you to 10 million in revenue. It's not what gets you to 100. What gets you to 100 isn't what gets you to a billion. And your strategies have to change. And in a lot of ways, the skill sets and the people just become different. If you are, you know, you're trying to get to your first $1 million in revenue, you do not need the, you absolutely don't need me. I am overhead, I am expensive, and I'm not good at hands-on keyboards. I'm not good at the day-to-day work anymore. What you need is someone who is scrappy, growth mindset, and is just going to go in and tinker and work and is really, really good at just executing. If you're going from 10 million in revenue to 50 million in revenue, that skill set starts to work less. And you still need some of the core principles, but you'd start to need more specialization. And the bigger a company gets, the more you need specialization and sort of depth of expertise. In the beginning, you don't need really, really, really deep expertise. You need someone who can do a lot of different things. Where we are right now at Talend, I just hired in December a VP of digital who is an absolute rock star. I needed someone that has a really, really deep level of expertise, because that is what is critical right now. If we were, you know, 5 million in revenue, I don't need someone as strong as her. I need someone who can do a little bit of everything, write some copy, and just sort of get stuff done.
From a team growth, is there points along the way from when you're growing from an SMB to mid-sized enterprise? When you were like with AdRoll, when you went from 3 to 25, yeah, was there tipping points, or what is that tipping point for you when it goes, wow, we really need to diversify? Does it depend on the industry and if you're online only or online offline? Does it depend on B2B, B2C, or is it, you know, not to give an SEO answer because you were kind of an SEO for a while, depends. Is there any kind of indicators?
There are certain things, and part of it is I've always almost always sort of worked in high growth and worked in tech. So if you're in a more traditional business, some of this may apply less, but it's, if you're doing something that's high growth, you'll start to reach, I've always looked at tipping points in revenue of what are you trying to do and where do you try to accomplish? And I look at Adroll, I've got a, I think they were about 50 million in revenue maybe when I started. And they have three marketers who were great, but they were very sort of broad. You didn't really need a marketing strategy. It was, we know we have to be at trade shows. Let's just, you know, do some stuff at trade shows. We know we have to be on AdWords. We know we need a website. So let's just sort of throw things together. We know we'll need blogs. So we'll just write a bunch of content. So it was just get things out the door, which works till a point, and then it starts to break. And then it's, well, who works on what? And competition gets higher and you want to keep scaling and getting more revenue, and it just gets a little bit harder. And when I came in, it was, this made a ton of sense of how to get here, but how do we actually drive a little bit more scale? The having one person who is updating your webpage and sending out your emails and running your AdWords campaign and writing your copy for your ads and making sure leads get routed, that makes sense when you have dozens of leads, not thousands of leads. And once revenue starts to support it, if I put somebody that's full-time on SEO versus 8% of this person's time, now it's really going to start to pay back dividends. So those are things that we started to look like. And I usually get brought in at this point, which is so funny because I was just, I had such a shady paid search background when I started. And now I'm the person who comes in that goes, all right, how do we build for scale? And how do we build for scale? How do we up level as a brand? How do we look bigger than we are? And how do we build this reputation?
I think the meeting that we just talked about that you were coming from right before we jumped on this is, we don't have to talk about what it's about, but it's about internal things. Yeah. And having someone that manages PPC and is siloed and knows their little space doesn't understand how, like, the analytics will impact your affiliate stuff or mm-hmm. everything, or the trade show that's going on. They don't have the bigger picture. At what point, when you start having meetings around, you know, attribution and working with sales teams and growing a sales team, working with customer service, having to deal with from SEO and just content or infrastructure and working with IT, are there points where you go, wow, having one person do five things and this person maybe do PPC, where do you start to need that VP of digital that you just were talking about how you needed?
It was the part of sort of tying everything together. And when I had joined, we actually, even for the size that Talon was when I joined, there actually was just one person that was basically doing all online marketing. We had a marketing operations team that was doing some of the marketing operations pieces. But the things that were missing was, what's the connection between, we have Marketo forms and we're running paid search ads, and then what are our field marketers doing? And there was no connection point between any of it. And they had been so jack of all trades, but also sort of specialized and siloed. And part of why I brought in this VP of digital was, all of these things work together. The relationship with the sales organization is deeply tied to our digital marketing program, is deeply tied to our website. Why are we acting like these things aren't, or pretending like these things aren't really interconnected? So brought someone in to say, this isn't a bunch of tactical execution. What's the overarching strategy? Why do we choose to use a landing page or a Marketo form? And why do we choose to have this many fields on a form? Because what's really easy to happen is when you have people in complete silos, it's, well, for my metric, I need to generate as many form fills as possible. So I'm going to remove country and industry because I can increase conversion. And that makes perfect sense. But then you find out that the marketing operations person can't route leads to the salesperson because they need industry and country. So then the salesperson can't get leads, and then they try to fix it and everything gets delayed by 3 days. But if you have someone that's thinking holistically across the whole picture, it helps them set the right metrics, because your metric isn't filling out a form. Your metric is pipeline and revenue for the company. But they're able to step in and say, oh, no, you're missing this part. I know what you want to do is increase form fills, but really, by doing that, here's the downstream effect and consequences. And once you get to a certain size, you need to think, especially as you bring in a sales team, you need to think a lot about the interplay between what we do in marketing and how it impacts sales.
Through your career, how much more knowing the marketing stack and understanding how they connect and don't connect, mm-hmm. like the one time where a certain company based in Utah that's really well known for analytics told us that their solution would work with a really big company that you used to work for in San Francisco with lead routing, and they were full of it. You can probably guess which companies those are. But that was the marketing stack, and we were sold a bad bill of goods. But over the years, like even the marketing stacks that I've understood, and I can only imagine at the enterprise level and even midsize, just how much of your time is spent knowing that side of things. Is it grown 10%, or is it just like you can't even register how much more you know now?
It's interesting, because I think I'm a more unique CMO because I came up so heavily through digital and tech that you will have a lot of CMOs now, even if they came up on the demand gen side or they're even on the product marketing side, that tries to get that conceptual knowledge and understanding of marketing technology, and they'll study and they'll research or maybe even work for marketing technology companies. I had this totally different perspective because I was the practitioner. I touched the technology. My teams ran the technology. I was always the back of house marketer versus the front of house marketer. So I kind of have this advantage on the marketing tech side that I just get it a little bit deeper because it was my life for so long. So I think most CMOs don't know too much and aren't that deep. And what you can do in those situations is you hire someone like the woman I have who runs digital, who is really, really deep and understand technology and how these things work together, and can talk to a vendor and say, no, I know this isn't true. Don't tell me your vision. Don't give me your demo. Show me what you can actually do. And you can call people out if it's not correct. And having someone on your team that has that is super important. I can tell you what I sometimes terrify my team with, for the people who don't know me as well, is you don't ever expect the CMO to actually be able to have a deep conversation about lead scoring, or I want to talk about, Gatsby, and you don't get many CMOs that can have that conversation, or don't give me the high level paid search. Here's the overview. No, really, what are you doing to fix quality score? I don't like those numbers. And I happen to be able to have those conversations, and I still believe I can add value in the technology conversations. So I probably get a little bit deeper. And when I look at some things on the tech stack side at this point, I'm not as close to it as I used to be, but I can call BS on things of that's not how this works unless you've completely re-architected your products. That's not how this works. Tell me what really happens. And I think as advice for everybody who don't have that technical expertise is have someone on your team that does, and get customer references to really prove out you connect and integrate with this other product. I want to talk to someone who's done that, and you can't be on the call.
Ouch.
Yeah. I'm also a great person if you're mad at a vendor, just to send in.
Wait, what was that?
I'm a great person if you're mad at a vendor to send in. It's rare I ever get to be angry, and it's rare I ever get to, be that person. But don't lie to me about what your product can do and make my team look bad.
Well, and it costs time and money.
Absolutely.
It's like, well, you told the CEO and the team told you that it would be done by X day. And now we're understanding that we now need 3 different plugins and the dev team's resources, which we were told would not be needed for 3 months,
or
were booked for 5 months.
Yep.
I'm going to segue into another question that I was going to keep for later, but I think it's a good time. Moving up in a company versus hired in VP, CMO type, because you've kind of done both. Does your management and how you manage and work with teams change at all, or even does your hiring change at all as far as promoting people versus, like, do you expect it, probably the same thing, but how you manage and how you have done that, is anything there?
It's definitely different. And I will say that the some things that are in your head versus the some things that are real. So I've gone up through an organization, and the good thing about when you rise through an organization is as you get promoted and you take on bigger teams and bigger responsibility, you have all of this credibility internally. And so you're stepping into new roles, and it's, well, we already know Lauren and we trust her and she's great. So you're taking that credibility and clout with you, and you already have those relationships. And the more senior you get, so much of it is about relationships and working together and cross-functional natures. So there's definitely an advantage to that. The only disadvantage, sort of when rising through an organization, is you have to adjust your brand. So as a good example, when I got hired at Salesforce, I got hired, and this was 11 or 10 years ago, I got hired to run paid search. And then I start our social program. That's how long ago it was. You didn't have social. And I started display advertising and retargeting. And then I took over email, SEO, and the website and email, and then eventually ran all of digital. The first thing I had to do to get, as my career progressed there, was not to be the paid search woman anymore. And it wasn't paid search. It was online advertising. And then I don't want to be the advertising person. I want to be the digital person. And then how I take on that. And then what became challenging from there is I built such a strong reputation on digital. What if I wanted to go run marketing for a business unit? Well, we don't need a digital marketer. We need a market. We need another type of marketer. And it's because my brand was so strong in what I was good at as I rose through the organization. It helped a ton with getting work done. It helps a ton with credibility, and it makes you move faster, which is great. You're able to attract talent internally, and I was able to pull people from different teams, which worked really, really well. I was able to recruit really well because we had such a team with such a good reputation. But you may reach a point in an organization where your own success, if you want to do something different or if you want to go broader, may be something that hinders you because people have a perception of who you are. And then leaving and going and running and coming in as an executive, all of that clout and credibility that you brought in, you don't have that internal reputation. Usually when you come in as an outsider, people will assume you're amazing for the first 3 months, and then sort of the shine wears off the penny, and then you have to keep proving that you're amazing, which you all are. But it just has that little bit of different timing. Coming in externally can definitely be harder as you are trying to figure out how does everything work. What worked for you at one company might not work at another company. You have to learn the company and the systems and the process. You have to build a whole new set of relationships. I think the things that have made me successful, and if anyone here is going to a new company and sort of going in a leadership position in a new company, I'll tell you the things that were my hangups, which I no longer have. When I first thought about hiring, you may have a book of people you want to hire because you know they're great at what they do. And the first time I went as a VP to a different company, in the back of my head, I went, well, I don't want to hire these people because it's going to look like I'm coming in and I'm just hiring all of my friends. And I'm replacing, you know, people with all of my friends. And it was this insecurity. And now when I went to talent, I brought a ton of people with me. And it wasn't, I'm hiring my friends. It's, I know what great looks like. And I know where the gaps in the organization are. And I happen to, through many years of experience, have a network of people who are exceptional at what they do. And now I can pull these people in with me. And it's not just about me. It is about what's the talent that I can attract and how can we kind of jump in and do this together. So it's been a real advantage going in now is I've hired some really, really incredible people to supplement some of the great people that we already had at Talend, but it was people through my network that have worked for me or with me over the years.
You know, I was just going to say, I've never had a problem with anything like that. I think about it like with, you know, you see it all the time in the NFL or other sporting events where the entire coaching staff goes with the coach or whatnot. And, you know, that's a lot of how we built things at first with Avalanche. And it's interesting hearing all this because we're just right now going through one of our, if you will, quote unquote, firsts. You know, we have one of our executive level directors that's been with us from the start. But he basically had done just about everything that he could or accomplished everything that he could, you know, opposed or aside from being an actual owner of the company. But he went ahead and moved on and wanted to try something new. And he's going to be a professor now at BYU, Idaho. But he loved the team so much. Like, we tried to figure out things, and I don't know if you know, you have any thoughts on this, but he moved in. We're moving him into a role of like an advisor position on a board. Mm-hmm. Now, that's something we've never had before, but he wanted to still be a part of it, but he also wanted to go out and try new things because he pretty much accomplished what he felt he could with us. And anyway, that's kind of some of the thoughts that I had while you were sharing all that.
It is, and I love that now there's that advisor role for him too, of the, you want to keep people and sort of keep them engaged, especially when they've added a ton of value, of what are other ways you can sort of think about having them contribute.
Yep, exactly. So
I think it was like when I got my first VP job, it was my own insecurity, which I refer to as the gremlins in my head that are, you can't do this, and what are people going to think? Now that I've done it enough, it's one of those is like, that's in your head, it's not real, and people are just excited when you come in with really great people.
Yeah, for reals. I just laugh at that. I've had to do the same thing with getting my own self out of my own head with things like that, where, you know, even something as simple as when you first started speaking or you're speaking to a different audience or whatever, and you realize that, all right, well, I'm worried about, you know, three or four of the people in the crowd, but that's not who I'm speaking to. I'm speaking to this part of it. And anyway, just it's interesting, and I love your perspective on that. But sorry, Dave, you were going to jump in and ask another question.
Oh no,
we're just in the audience to heckle all of our friends. I mean,
I will tell you, I remember the first time I spoke at a conference, and I spoke at PubCon, was my very, very first conference, and I'm not going to say what year it was. And I was so nervous. I thought I was going to throw up. And I was like, what are people going to think? What if I'm not the expert? What if I'm wrong? People are going to know more about this than me. What if I look stupid? Yep. I don't deserve to be here. And I still remember that. And I was talking, I remember I was with the guys from Best of the Web right before going, oh my God, I'm going to throw up. Oh my God, I'm going to throw up. And they were like, you'll be fine. And I went on stage, and by the time I got off stage, I went, wow, I know more than I thought I did.
And yeah, that's awesome.
It was all of this insecurity in my head. And I mean, thankfully, like both of you, we've spoken more times than we can even count. And that first initial time, I was terrified. And now it's, you're like, maybe there's a couple of hecklers in the audience, but for the most part, you're here because you deserve to be here.
Well, that's only if Dave's in the audience. If Dave's in the audience, then, you know, there's a guaranteed heckler right there. Yes. But
or Ben, or a couple other of our friends. Oh, no, I still get scared crazy before I have to talk. Huh. For like the 10 minutes up to it, I just keep going over my deck and I keep trying to keep myself busy. Up until the point where I walk up there, and then it settles.
I'll be honest with you guys. I used to rehearse more, and now I look through my content, I look through my deck, and I can tell you I have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth. And I go up, and thankfully, you can tell me if I'm wrong. I'm a good presenter. I'm good on stage, but I was so
prepared.
And people are now, I was like, well, I sort of wing it. And everyone's like, you're not winging it. This is 20 years of preparation. I went, good point. Good point.
That's a good way to look at it. Cause that's how I am now. Like, I feel like when I go over it too much, like this is just me personally and everyone's different, but it's awesome to hear that you're like that. Cause sometimes I feel like, okay, well, I'm not giving it my all, but you're right. It is the 20 years of plus of experience. Yeah. And you know what you're talking about. And that's a lot of times what I do. And I feel like some of my best and some of the best feedback that I've gotten is when I've gone up there and I haven't really, you know, I've put together the deck. I know the material, but I haven't gone over it and rehearsed it 20 million times. And so
get that. What you're saying is you're not rehearsed. It's not a narrative. It's real. And it's, let me tell you about this because I know this works. And by the way, I have a really funny story for you. Because this is my life.
Perfect.
I don't know if this will air before, but I might be doing Marcus Tandler and Izzy have a show on Fridays on Facebook, mm-hmm. 302 of a Kind, and they do it live here in the Pacific and Central. It's usually in the morning. There it's after or evening after work because they're in Germany, so they're usually having a frosty beverage. Mm-hmm. But they're going over old decks from like 10 plus years ago. And I found one of my very first ones and there's not a single word on any slide. Same. It's just photos. And I still do that now.
Oh, I was like, oh, tell Marcus I say hi. Part of me is like, do you think any of these people would ever be interested in, I'm so not qualified to give an SEO talk anymore or to talk about any of this.
No, you're supposed to give a talk and it's all about how relevant it is or not from like, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. Jono did one about schema.
Oh,
who was it, Aleda? Someone just did one last week about something that most of it was still relevant. Someone did one about link building. And some of it's like, well, some of it's still shady. Some of it's still good.
I had a conversation. Hopefully the people that I had this conversation with will not listen to this. I had a conversation with people at work a couple of days ago in very different departments that were explaining SEO to me. And they were explaining the importance of, no, with SEO now, you need to keep putting content up like all the time. You have to always just constantly put content all the time. That's how you rank. Otherwise, you just fall off. And I went, uh-huh. Okay. I'm
is that not, how that works?
Didn't even want to get into it, did you?
Yeah, with the people that were in this meeting and not a single person was in marketing, everyone was an executive. And I was like, I am going to smile and nod. I really am not going to have this conversation right now. This is not worth me having. And I was like, I'm just going to go do my job. We're cool, guys.
Funny. It reminded me of an email that I got just this week from a client we had from many, many, many years ago. Again, we haven't touched their site, done any SEO or anything for them in years, okay? Created all the content, did everything that we could, and we're not one of those people that just strings you along and keeps charging you. And anyway, we parted our ways, and it was so neat to get this email from them, and they just basically laid out how all the work that we had done had laid them to be the person that dominated their industry and what they were doing, and they were now at the 2 million a year mark, and they were so happy and they were so grateful for everything that we did, and we haven't touched or done anything SEO wise or any, and they hadn't hired anybody else. Nothing had been done for years. And so it's funny for, you know, to hear that. I'm not sharing anything new that the two of you don't know, but we know that, and that's why that's funny.
Yes, exactly. And there are it's also good to know that your old client comes back and goes, by the way, thank you for helping my business.
Yeah. I mean, that does make you feel good every once in a while.
It does. And as marketers, we very rarely get thanked for any of the work we do.
Very true. Oh,
CTO usually just blames us for everything.
I refer to
which is a completely different episode that we can record sometime.
I refer to most of my job as no good deed goes unpunished.
So very good.
Today we're getting close to the
end. I have
end
like
here.
One wrap-up question, yes. Which is like three combined, okay. Almost.
Perfect.
Just the remote versus work from home, and just how most companies, especially even in the Bay Area, everyone suddenly thinks open offices are horrible and everyone works from home.
Weird.
And just like the changing world and keeping teams connected and motivated now and even in normal times, if there's ever normal times, if there's ever such a word, really. What tips do you have for the leaders and just, in, you know, even the rank and file, quote unquote, that's, you know, some of us are at times. What have you done or seen, or what would you suggest to people?
Totally.
Before we lose you.
Yes, I will say, so managing people is not for everybody, and leading teams is not for everybody. And anytime someone who's ever worked for me says, I want to grow my career, I want to manage people, the first thing I will do is I will tell them why that's a terrible idea, why leading teams and managing people is the worst choice they will ever have. Everyone will complain to you. It's like being a parent. Your children will only tell you how awful you are and that you're failing. They're never going to say you're great. And that's my, like, when people say I want to manage people and me trying to dissuade them. And then I tend to follow it up with the greatest privilege of my job is to lead teams and to manage people. You have to do it if you want it and if you love it. And as trying as managing, I think I've got 80 or 90 people in my org, as emotionally trying as it can be, it is by far the sort of privilege of my job. Talent is interesting. Before COVID happened, we were founded in France. Our headquarters are in Northern California. We've got a couple of regional headquarters and then a lot of remote workers. So in my 80 to 90 person org, there were probably only 25 people in the main office with me. And then a lot of people in France and in the UK and all over. I don't think I fully appreciated what it's like to be a remote worker until this happened. And I thought I was good at leading remote teams. And this has been a really educational experience. And I've spent a disproportionate amount of time trying to make sure my organization is connected during all of this. The word unprecedented, I think everyone needs to take a shot every time somebody says that now. But the world is fundamentally different. And I spend a lot of time thinking about how do I keep every single employee on my team engaged, connected. They need to know what priorities are, where we're going, why what they do matters. And honestly, there's a lot of emotional support right now because the world is weird and screwed up and it's hard and it's emotionally trying. So things that we've done that I think have worked well with the org is there is a, you know, stay really active on Slack. We had the public marketing Slack channel. We created a private marketing Slack channel, which is the be yourself, don't be who you need to be in front of the company, which has been good because it creates a space for us and it creates an us environment. I do twice a week 30-minute marketing office hours, which is just me sort of sitting around and people can come in whenever they feel like to talk about whatever they want. Sometimes it's work-related, sometimes it's not work-related. We also created, we have two women in my org that are yoga instructors. So we do once a week marketing yoga. And it's, if you can make it in, you're free, join. So we are just creating all of these opportunities for people to stay connected. So we've got Zoom yoga. We have marketing office hours. For all of the people that were used to working in an office, we sent everyone work from home kits, which was some coffee, a DoorDash gift card, and one of those little like old-fashioned kits or gin and tonic kits and a little airplane-sized bottle of booze for the people in the States that were allowed to mail that to. And we scheduled coffee with Carol, lunch with Lauren, booze with Brittany, and just ways to just keep building those connections, because the things that we're missing remotely is the casual interaction, is the human engagement. We can still have all the meetings we want over Zoom. We can still chat with each other over Slack, but what we're missing is the softer side, the casual interactions, the times to get to know each other. So we have really, really leaned into how do we create these spaces for people who want connection, that they have it. And, you know, twice a week, we've got office hours. I have also work from home. Lauren has given up on things like wearing makeup and doing her hair and everyone at work gets the most sort of authentic side of me. There are no more airs to put on. And it's made, I think, me more approachable, but it's also made, it's given the opportunity for everybody else to be who they are and be vulnerable and be happy. And the last thing that I've done, which I think the team appreciates, I initially did it for myself, that on our Slack channel, almost every day, I've missed a lot of days recently, I do an iPhone video that I grab my iPhone and I sit at home and I record a video of whatever's top of mind. Sometimes it's, here's the priorities for marketing. Sometimes it's, I have 14 pints of ice cream in my refrigerator. Sometimes it's, let me tell you about why is the time. This is the time for us to strive and to be more than we ever thought we could be. And sometimes it's, look, guys, I'm having a bad day. And it's okay to have bad days. So I post these like 2 to 5 minute videos to the org that are sometimes funny and sometimes inspirational and sometimes deeply personal as my way of sharing who I am and what's going on with the team. And they get to do the same thing. And it helps bridge those connections to keep people feeling as tight as possible during a time where you don't have people.
Put me on that email list.
Yeah, I will send you the videos. You also get the how crazy is Lauren, because in the beginning, I looked like I looked when I went into the office. And now there's days where it's like, wow, you had curly hair and you don't comb it. Good to know.
You're like, not today. Don't care.
And it's like, you know what? Today's not the day. Today is I ate a pint of ice cream last night and this is where I am today.
Very cool. Well, Lauren, I really appreciate you taking the time out and sharing all this with us. This has been very insightful and just, I know that we're the ones that are putting this podcast on, but I love it because I get to sit back and learn so much, and that's because of amazing guests like you. So I do appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today.
Thank you for having me. I love doing these, especially with people that I've known for this long. It makes me honestly miss the community a lot more because I don't feel like I participate anymore. But thank you so much for having me, and hopefully I will see you both in real life again one day soon.
I'm San Francisco's high on my list to get out there to bug you.
Hey,
so, and a couple other people.
I just got a new place that I will move into hopefully this year.
But then I can't walk to Nick's Crispy Tacos.
Good point.
I know. This is like one of the reasons I always stayed with Lauren is because then I could watch the taco place.
I went there.
Not the only reason.
I went there on Sunday and I was like, I'm tired of cooking. And I got a Nick's Crispy Taco.
They're so good.
It was this moment of normalcy and just pure happiness. I should have taken
a
picture.
The place is crazy.
Yeah.
Matt, you need to go there if you're ever in San Francisco. Next time you're in San Francisco. So good, though.
Definitely will.
2 tacos and you'll be more than full.
Yes.
All right, we'll let you get going.
Thank you. For Lauren with Talend and Dave with Northside Metrics, I'm Matt. And I'm glad that you guys joined us. And thanks all. Bye-bye.